email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
5 on 5, 5 on ray@rte.ie. Now, we're going to be talking about things that aren't suitable for little ears. So if there are little ears around, maybe you might move them away from the radio. Our next guest is no stranger to the show. Her bravery and determination is something we've admired for years. And her dedication to making sport a safer place for our children has become her life's mission. Karen Leach, great to have you on. And congratulations on your One Child International Award. Tell us
Thank
about
you,
that.
Ray. Yes, an organisation in the United States, One Child International, and their CEO, Evan Daly, contacted me earlier on this year to tell me that his organisation and board and trustees had decided that I would be their this year's winner for the award for child protection. Really, it's for my dedication to working and speaking out about abuse and trying the very, very best that I can for children to be kept safe in sport.
So that what happened to you wouldn't happen to other children.
So that what happened to me. And the only reason I keep on going at this is because I really don't want any other child to ever end up with a life like mine.
Yeah. You're speaking internationally and travelling internationally, spreading the word. So where has it brought you?
Oh, over the years, for the past 17 years, it's brought me right across the world. Argentina, Brazil, Georgia, Norway, Iceland, all across Europe, the UK. I'm on the Sport England advisory panel. I'm on the pool of experts for the Council of Europe. I'm just recently Paul Stewart, who's been... I know you've spoken
to him. He sat in that very chair where you're sitting, yeah, yeah.
Well, Paul contacted me recently as well. He's just put a course together, a safeguarding course, a very basic safeguarding course, easy to follow. And he launched it and he contacted me and asked me would I be an ambassador for him and for the course. And obviously I went through the course and thought, you know, yes, this is good. This will help. Mm. And yes, so just recently I've become an ambassador for that with Paul.
And just in case people don't know, Paul Stewart wrote a book about his sexual abuse at the hands of a coach.
That's right.
He played football in the UK.
That's right.
It was. I remember because he hadn't spoke about it out loud.
No, it was 2016.
Yes.
Paul and many of the other football players actually started to speak out. And that's when, I mean, there was over 400, maybe 500 ex-football players came forward in 2016.
As well as receiving the award earlier this year, Derry O'Rourke, the man who sexually abused you, was back in court. He was sentenced to how much this time?
Well, he got 10 years,
right.
But because it was all concurrent, really, if you add up the different charges and what each sentence was, it should have been 17 or more. I'll be honest, I'm really disappointed that that's all he got, because I had really hoped this time they would literally throw away the key and leave him in there, because I just think the sentencing in Ireland when it comes to child abuse, sexual abuse, rape or anything like that is just... it's not great.
So just remind people, 19 girls, including yourself, have come forward saying they were sexually abused,
yes,
at the hands of Derry O'Rourke,
yes,
over the years.
Yes.
And for that, back in 1998, he was sentenced, and again in 2000 and again in 2005,
yeah,
all concurrent, as you say.
Yes.
So how many years has he served in prison up to now?
So previously, up to now, 9 years.
9 years.
9 years. That's all for all of us, apart from this wonderful young lady that has just come forward this year and has been put through this court case on her own. I one of the things I want to say to her is I hope she's okay. She's so brave. She's amazing. I am so sorry that she had to go through that on her own.
Mm.
I've been there. I know what that's like. And the fact that he denied knowing her all the way through just says what kind of a man he was like. If I haven't met this young lady, because it was 3 years after I stopped swimming, 1989, her year started. So I haven't met her. But if I went into court and gave evidence today on that court case without meeting her, and she went in the following week and gave evidence, our evidence would be identical.
Mm.
Because I know exactly where she was talking about, what she was talking about. It's identical, as so I'm sure many of the other women that would have looked at that would be saying the same thing.
One of the judges or one of the solicitors talked about Derry O'Rourke's modus operandi. He did the same it seems, to every, there was a muscle check involved.
Yeah.
Sometimes there was visualization, hypnosis.
Yeah.
And he did the same. So 19 girls over more than 20 years. And would you say that's it?
No. No, no, no. I mean, this man was coaching swimming back to the early 70s, right up until 1992 when he first got arrested. If I'm correct, that is that year. We're talking about 22 years, possibly more. There's so many more.
Okay, I was talking last week very briefly about the recent historical sexual abuse in Day and Boarding School run by Religious Orders Report. And I was saying that there must be hundreds, if not thousands, of people out there who have never said a word to anybody. And they're living with that secret and probably that shame.
Yeah.
Why do you think some people like yourself came forward and others have decided to keep it a secret?
So I didn't come forward until he was in prison and this all came out. And I was scared. I was scared, I was frightened, I was embarrassed, I was ashamed, I was dirty. And then in my head, I was like, this can't be real. I was living on another planet. When I left swimming at 17, Derry O'Rourke left me broken. He left me dead. Mm. That's the way I was left. As most of those people that were speaking on the radio with Joe Duffy, those that didn't, and those that across Ireland that have had other, you know, cases in the same as me, it destroys you. It just breaks you, and you're not able to speak. You're in shock. You're in a different world, and it hurts so deeply, and the pain you're carrying is so deep. You're just trying to get out of bed in the morning and get through the day. I denied it for a long time inside me.
Yeah. You left the country.
Yeah, I left.
You took to drink.
Yeah.
You were sort of nearly on a road to self-destruction.
I was and I did, and I did
try
everything. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I spent 10 years in St. John of God's psychiatric hospital just down the road. I drove past it today, and I just, you know, it brought me great sadness.
Yeah.
I've ended up in the secure units in that hospital for the simple reason every time I was let out, I thought, right, this is it. I would attempt to end my life because that's all I wanted. Mm. I couldn't live with the pain. I wanted to die, and I didn't know how to live, and I didn't know how to tell anyone what was really going on inside. It's very hard to explain the pain and the hurt and that deep, deep hole, the blackness that you're living in. So that's why. And I'm saying this even when I was in hospital and had said something and was under medical care. It's so scary to take that step and say something, because the first person you have to acknowledge it with is yourself. And I was like, is this a dream? Is this a nightmare? I was all over the place. I'm 55. It's taken me over 40 years to, for the first time this year, I can honestly, I know other times it says I'm doing good. But this time, for the first time ever, I am becoming Karen.
Brilliant.
I really am becoming me. I can feel it in me. I'm me.
And you saw him on the news because he was in court again. He's 78. Mm. He's a frail old man. How did you feel looking at him?
So when I first got contacted to say that he was in court, actually, I was going on holidays the next day, and I just shook from head to toe on the Wednesday night. I stood in my house, in my kitchen, and I screamed and I screamed and I screamed. Because that pain is still there. Mm. And I was so, I said, first of all, I wanted him to plead guilty, and I thought of that young woman. So then the next day I was going on holidays, and I was going to the sun. The sun does miracles. I was leaving the rain. I was going to the sun. So I actually couldn't have planned it better without knowing. Mm. So I was away from Ireland. I was in the sun. And so that was for the week. And then I got a message on the Thursday to say that the jury was out.
Right.
And I was sick all that day, and part of me got scared. They can't let him off. So I can imagine what the young lady was feeling. So a minute to two, obviously I got another message to say he was guilty.
Yeah.
When I looked at him and when I saw the pictures, one of them especially walking up the steps, he had a suitcase and he had a walking stick. And I just, for the first time ever, thought, look at the state of you. And I got angry. I got angry at him. And I've never got angry. I've got angry at everybody else, mom, dad, my brothers. I've been angry at me. I have never got angry with him. And I look back because I'm scared. If I get angry at him, what inside my little girl. So this year when I saw him and I thought, look at the state of you, like you said, an old man. And I thought to myself, I can stand in front of you now and I can put my hand out and I could actually physically push you away from me and you'll fall over. And there was great strength in me, came into me, and I felt I was taken back. My power.
Control.
Yes, control. And I thought, like, you're never, ever going to hurt me or anyone else again. Look at the state of you.
Because when you left the country after you finished school, you were literally running away from him.
Absolutely. That's the only reason. And mum and dad didn't know what was wrong with me. I got on a plane and I went to London. And back in that time in the 80s, my dad had a building company. There was a recession and builders were hit. So dad had gone to London to work. Me, mum and my three brothers, after the nationals, everything was focused around swimming. Once that nationals were finished in Guinness's in 1986, which was the worst nationals I had, and I swam terrible. I left a really bad swimmer.
Because he had been abusing you.
So, since I had started, since 10.
10.
And I got on that plane with mum and my three brothers and we were going over to visit dad for the rest of the summer. And in my head, I says, right, I am not coming back. He was sitting on a chair on the side of the pool at Guinness's, staring out, looking at the swimming pool. And I walked up to him after my last race that had been terrible. And I said to him, I'm not coming back for the next season. And he was staring straight out and he just turned his head like that to the side, stared at me and said, you will be back. And as I'm saying it to you, Ray, I'm there.
Scary.
And I remember walking away and thinking, no way am I ever coming back. And I was 17.
Did you think you were the only one? Or had you got a clue that there were more girls being abused?
No idea. And when I'm looking back, you know, I was all over the place. Because back then, not much different than today, we don't really talk about these things.
Mm.
No, I hadn't. I had no idea.
So he's away now for 10 years, most likely to spend 7 years in prison, which will bring him up to 85. But you don't fear him anymore?
No, I know he can't hurt me anymore, but still, that doesn't stop what my inside, my little girl that's lived through, is still living through, and certain things that come and happen that scare me. I'll give you an example. I'm back teaching swimming.
Which is brilliant.
Absolutely. That's
a major milestone for you.
Well, the last time I was in here, if you'd asked me about swimming or a swimming pool, there was absolutely no way.
Too triggering. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely no way. You know, I've given out to myself for years as a woman. Why didn't I say no? Why didn't I say something? And why didn't I leave? And for years, I've given out, beaten myself up about that.
But you were 10, Karen.
I know.
And you've heard everyone has said this to you over and over again. And your rational side of your brain has said that to you over and over again.
100%.
Yeah.
But since I have gone back teaching and I walk around that swimming pool every day now and I'm teaching children, I love swimming.
Mm.
And I love teaching swimming. And I actually remember, which was the biggest thing. I was like, oh my God, you know, the detail that I remember, the things that I remember. And the one thing that I've got from that is I all of a sudden is like, that's why I stayed as long as I did. I loved it. I really, really loved it. And yes, I was a child. You know, you still why to yourself. Going back to the first question you asked about why maybe many people don't say anything. There's all this inner pain that's going on and inner thoughts.
Mm. part of his grooming process, and a lot of people, particularly in sport, part of the grooming process is the promise of greatness. They spot you, say to your parents that, there could be an Olympian there.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant for the parents to hear. So there's a grooming of the parents as well, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mum and Dad, I mean, they were so proud. He told them, you know, exactly what you just said there. She has got potential. He headhunted me. My dream as a little girl was the Olympics. He was the Irish Olympic swimming coach at the time. He's told Mum and Dad, great potential. Yes, she's going to the Olympics. So, you know, their little girl has been talking about this dream. And next thing, the Irish Olympic swimming coach makes the phone calls.
Yeah.
And of course you're proud and this is fantastic.
The Olympics must have been a difficult watch for you, was it? Because swimming was up there this year.
It was. And, you know, congratulations and well done to everybody.
Mona and Daniel.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And everybody else that was there. The sad part for me was Mona won her bronze medal and Daniel won his gold. And that was the week that Derry O'Rourke was found guilty, the court case.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was great sadness for me. I thought, you know, what ifs. I left very bad swimming. But yet I went in there with dreams, with hopes, with beliefs and determination. Yeah, what if? I might not have, but I might have. You know, you don't know. There was a determination in me. There was a dream and a belief and there was a 1,000% support from Mum and Dad.
Your poor mum.
Oh.
Yeah. It broke her completely when she found out.
Absolutely, right. Yeah. Absolutely. And Mum and then obviously Dad. Mum, like I didn't tell Mum and Dad. And when it came, I told Mum first. And I asked Mum to tell Dad because I couldn't tell Dad. I was broke and devastated. When I told Mum, and obviously they saw me then, your break. I was broken before, but I was definitely broken afterwards and I was all over the place. On a Thursday, Mum said to me and she told me that she was sorry that she hadn't looked after me as a little girl. And that she loved me and all that she wanted from me was to be happy. And I've always said to Mum and Dad, Mum, you know, I didn't tell you because I know, Ray, if I had told Mum and Dad, I know they would have saved me. They would have said absolutely without a doubt. And on that Thursday, I would have had this conversation with Mum and she kept saying that she was sorry that she didn't look after me as a little girl, which was absolutely not true because she was the best mum in the world. And then unfortunately on the Thursday, my mum was gone.
We're going to take a quick break because all of that horrific experience has armed you to give talks all over the world and make the world a safer place for young boys and girls. So we're going to talk more about that in a moment, but first a commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. And just a reminder that some listeners may find this conversation upsetting. We're talking to Karen Leach. Karen is a safe sport advocate. We heard Karen's personal story before the break. So you are perfectly positioned to stand up in front of people and say, this is how you keep your children safe.
Yes.
And what's the major one? If you were going to say one thing to people.
My biggest focus is now is, what did I need as a little girl?
Right.
What did I need an adult to do for me?
Yeah.
And what I needed was I needed somebody to tell me it's okay to ask for help.
Right.
It's okay to talk. It's okay to share. But the big one is, and when I'm teaching swimming with all the children, they some of them think, oh, here she goes again. She's mad. I make a deal with every child I teach. And I say the first part of the deal is I want you all to know if you need help, I want you to know you can ask for help.
Yes.
And then I say the second part of this deal is, if there's anything going on around you or for you that's making you feel sad or lonely or unhappy or you feel yucky inside or something doesn't feel right, I want you to know that you can ask for help. Talk to somebody. And then I say, talk to someone you trust, your mummy, your daddy, your nanny, your granddad, your aunts, your uncle, your godparents, your teachers, your friends, your coaches. Because then they say, oh, you, Karen. And I say, When you're swimming, yes, me. But when you're not swimming, so obviously age appropriate. All I'm trying to do is plant a seed. Ask for help. Ask for help if you need help.
That was never said to you.
Never, ever, ever. And that is the one thing. Ray, if somebody had said that to me, maybe, just maybe, when I went out to the car to dad or home to mom, I might have said something. I might have asked for help.
Mm. Now, when our Kate was doing gymnastics, there was always a parent in the hall when Kate was learning swimming and Tom was learning swimming. I always stayed in the pool.
Yeah.
And you would like to think that people, because of your stories and all the other stories, are more aware and that this sort of thing is less likely to happen. Unfortunately, paedophilia is as old as the hills.
Yeah.
So there are paedophiles out there. So they'll, you know, get in there wherever they can.
Yeah.
Do you think it's still going on now? I don't want to scaremonger, but...
Listen, this is not scaremongering. And that's the problem that, you know, people say, oh, scaremongering is saying this. Absolutely 1,000%. Derry O'Rourke is in prison. But I'm telling you, there's 10 of him. Younger ones of him out there. It's not gone away. It'll never go away. They will always be there. It's what we do as adults to teach, educate, make our children, young people, elite athletes, even our parents, committee members, volunteers, coaches, board members, everybody. If we are aware and we actually start talking about this, Ray, I have had people say to me, oh yeah, you were part of that sex thing that went on years ago in swimming. You wouldn't believe some.
Sort of slightly dismissive.
Oh yeah. And the other thing, and I know historical, when people say, oh yeah, sure, that was historical. I'm not dead.
No.
I am not dead. It is not historical. It is as live today and happening today than it was when I was a little girl.
And I was going to say to you there, like we were talking about his sentencing, and I know this like is a truism, but your sentence is a life sentence. And all those people who were mentioned in that report last week, life sentences for all of those.
Yeah.
They have to live with it till their dying day.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say a day passes by that you don't think about
no,
it.
No, there's not. Not one day, Ray. And it just takes a slight thing or a slight memory and straight away I'm back there. I'm back there. I'll give you an example where you put the boards in where I'm teaching at the moment. You know, there's a boardroom and you put the boards in.
Boards
sorry, the kickboards.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the floats.
Yeah, actually, it's probably not called that
now. It's like a storage space.
That's right. It's probably not called that
Yes,
now.
The boardroom,
people
right.
People are saying, what is she talking about? But it's where, yes, you go in and you put the kickboards and... it was the boardroom at the end of the swimming pool in
the King's Hospital.
In the King's Hospital School in Palmerstown. We would have to go in there and get your boards, get your paddles. And if you went in there and he was in there, you were locked in, you were kept in there. And that's when basically you were in there and you couldn't get out basically until he was finished doing what he wanted to do to you. And on the far side of that boardroom was where the fans were. The fans and everything, the pumps.
Oh, yes. A lot of noise.
Yes.
So you were in...
Because
you're
back
teaching swimming, yes.
Yeah, sorry.
I completely understand.
When I went into that, where the storage room, I walked in and the door shut behind me and the light wasn't on. And I nearly had a heart attack. My whole body shook, my whole head, my whole everything. I was stuck to the ground. I literally crawled around the walls to the light switch, to switch the lights. And actually, it shocked me. Oh, my God. It just shows. Yeah. I walked in there. I've always turned the light. And it was that moment that obviously the door quickly shut behind me. That put me in that stage. Yeah. Now, there's no way I go in without that light on. And I'm 55.
Yeah. So we live in a world where there's Garda vetting.
Yes.
Parents hang around more.
Yes.
And each club has a, what do they call them?
A safeguarding officer.
Yes. They're
meant to have a safeguarding officer, a welfare officer. Yes.
And they're responsible for the safety of the children when they're on the premises or...
So they are, everybody is responsible for safety of children when they're on the premises. Every single person. The safeguarding officer would be the person that, a welfare officer would be the person that ensures all policies and procedures and everything's been carried out and everything's in place. They also are the person, the designated person of that club, that if there is something happening that a parent, child, coach, anybody, that they can go to.
Your parents didn't believe they needed to be watching over you. Now we live in an age where parents should believe that they need to be watching over. So there's probably more responsibility on the shoulders of parents now, do you think?
And you know, it's hard.
Yeah.
I understand there's a cost of living crisis. Parents are under so much pressure. We all are to get through every single day. There's so much going on in the world. The world has changed.
I suppose what I'm sort of saying is that we know an awful lot now.
We know more.
Yeah.
Definitely we know more. The biggest thing is, though, when you get caught up in the day-to-day running of life, you forget. You don't think of these things. They're not at the priority unless something like last week it comes up and it's mentioned. Then, but then life takes over again. When families have two or three children, it's really difficult.
Yes.
But it is, it has to be spoken about more.
I remember when we had the two children, that's handy enough because, you know, there's one, there's two of you, there's two of them. Once it goes beyond that, and it's like when they're babies, you can only hold two. Now, and you can only look after two of them. Somebody else might be off doing something else.
But we all need to be there, right?
Everybody needs to be vigilant.
On the same page, all of us.
Yes.
And we all need to talk about it. We need to continue raising awareness. It's off the agenda. When this all dies down next week, it'll be off the agenda.
You can understand why, because it's very, very difficult for people to listen to.
Absolutely. But what I've got to say is I understand all that and I know people don't like talking about it. But I do not want any other child to end up with a life like mine. Or it's not until it comes to your front door, right?
I know.
It's too late.
No. And silence protects these people.
That is their strongest weapon.
Yeah.
And who gives it to us? We all do.
Yeah.
We do as a nation and we do as a culture. It's not nice to talk about. We have to remove the shame. We have to remove the stigma. We have to keep talking about it. And in clubs and organisations, everybody feels, there's safeguarding policies, there's safeguarding procedures there. People say to me, you know, oh, Karen, it's not like it was before. And there's things in place to stop that. They don't stop that. As you said, there is individuals out there who know what they're doing. They go to places where there are children. They are good at what they do. They are manipulators. They are groomers of adults and children. Mm. And the only way and the most powerful way we will stop it is we break that silence and we talk about it.
Karen, thanks so much for coming in. Congratulations again on the award, One Child International, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
And if you've been affected by anything we've discussed there with Karen, you can go to rte.ie and there's a list of helplines there. Thanks again, Karen.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.